Hello, everyone. Welcome back to CGSF 90.1 FM, and I am Pranjali, your host for today. And this is the campus community radio for Simon Fraser University, which broadcasts for the unceded territories of the Kwakutlam, Musqueam, Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh Nations. And for today, I'd try to talk about the intersection of gender and automation, because if you guys listen to my open mics, you know I talk a lot about technology, intersection, and everything from a feminist science and technology lens. And I will be talking about automation in warehouse in particular, and also what it might mean for the technologies of future and platform capitalism. I know these sound like very big and complex terms, and I would say they are, but I will try to unpack these because, like, I was writing a paper for one of my courses, and yeah, I found some interesting things that I would like to share with you guys. And before I begin with the explanations, I would like to play a song, which I think you guys might enjoy, which is All Too Well by Taylor Swift. And I am a big ass Swiftie, so hooray to that. And tomorrow is my 21st birthday. And if you follow Taylor Swift, you know this song has a very good line about turning 21. So I'm looking forward to hearing that lines along with you and enjoy this wonderful melody by Taylor Swift. So let's go, Taylor. Yes.
The door with you, the air was cold, but something about it felt like home somehow. And I left my scarf there at your sister's house, and you still got it in your drawer even now.
Yeah.
So that was All Too Well by Taylor Swift in her album Red. And I actually listened to the 10-minute version of the song. And if you're a Swiftie, you know how important and significant that 10-minute version is. Because, like, that's the original lyrics that she wrote. But, you know, the music has this sort of audio in general has this sort of restriction on itself that it gets boring after a certain point of time. So she had to, like, cut it down to, like, 5 minutes, I believe, when she, like, launched it in her album. So, but she actually, on, like, fans' demand, she launched it, the complete version, the 10-minute version, later after the album was released. And she also shot a music video on that, which went on to win many global, international accolades. And, yeah, I really like the song, and I think it's supposed to be fun turning 21. So we'll see tomorrow. We'll see. but for now, I will try to talk a bit about automation in the warehouse, and then we'll go right into the next music for the day again, for the slot again. And I just wanted to perhaps elaborate a bit on the automation in warehouse before I talk about its intersection with gender. And when I talk about, like, technologies in the warehouse, I tend to talk about how we use automation and technologies and digitize every movement of the workers to the very, like, second. So how fast are you picking up the parcel from the line and you're, like, packaging? How fast are you doing it? So everything is, like, broken down into microseconds, and it is fed on the sort of different technologies around the warehouse workers. So, for example, we have wristbands, but we also have barcode scanners. So everything has, like, a time. So when you see, like, a 2-day prime delivery, it becomes hidden as to what sort of pressure the workers go behind that 2-day mark and what sort of techniques they have to adopt to adjust to the speed, the obsession with speed and algorithmization, which is, like, adding all the workers' data on how high his heartbeat or her heartbeat is and inputting in the time he or she takes to pick up the parcel and put it on the line, how long he or she takes to package those items, and so on and so forth. That is all, like, data, and the data is transferred and stored and optimized, quote unquote, into using the machines, and then they dictate how it ought to be. And this is done to, like, improve the efficiency and to reduce any sort of, like, human errors, and, you know, sort of also work on optimization and also maximize the profits. So yeah, that is the idea behind using technologies in the warehouse, because that reduces the cost. So less number of workers is equals to more profit for the company head or the factory owners, so on and so forth. But this argument of using technology in automation, use of technology and automation in workspaces and especially warehouses, is not new, as I think I talked about somewhere in January. That use of technology and automation and use of this supervision sort of lens, surveillance, what I call, has been there since 1830s at least. And this idea of rationalizing each step of work into small compartments, so compartmentalization and rationalizing of each task, existed at a large scale. And as I was researching into this paper that I'm writing, I found that the first, like, big scale factory that adopted this sort of breaking down of tasks was a German chocolate manufacturer, Stolrec. And by the year 1900s, they had put in place different automation techniques, which speeded up the process of packaging and dispatching items, and also the little things on confectionery lines. So, you know, the icing, the creaming and everything was beginning to be more and more automated. So there was, like, technology introduced into the food sector, I would say, in a broader sense. So that came about by the year 1900. So this is not a new phenomenon of, like, introducing robots and, like, automation in warehouse and then delivering it to your doorstep. It's not sort of like new idea, and it's not like a very revolutionary technological future that we imagine, that, you know, the robots will take over all the warehousing spaces and everything will be so automatic and so invisible to us that it wouldn't matter. Like, this is something that I would argue is not the case, because like this idea of automation, efficiency, and increasing productivity and maximizing the profits is not new, and it's not neutral endeavor in a sense. Also, the warehouses were found to have at least 75% of females as the workforce, and specifically these females included women of color, and indigenous women, and also other people of color, because they were understood as a more like flexible and quote-unquote cheap labor. So they were like employed in these new factories that were going up in the countrysides and so on. But this use of like, or the presence of female workforce in warehouses, where everything sort of began, like the industrialization process, as we say it, began, raises a very interesting question in my mind, at least, that what kind of gender relations form under these conditions of automation in the warehouse then? So is there, that is sort of my question. So is there a correlation, or is there dynamics between how gender is understood in these automating and increasingly robotified spaces? So how does gender play into that? So that's about my paper. So I found that gender construct and hierarchies in the warehouse is pretty much the same as it is in the industry, outside the industry. So however it exists in the society, it's sort of like the shape and the structure and the hierarchy remains the same inside the warehouse. So this also is important to understand when we talk about the futures of automation and we think of warehouses and deliveries that will be done by, like, you know, Teslas will like deliver us food, because like that's automated vehicles and like everything is automated. You are just sitting at home. Everything is just a click away. So this idea of like diminishing or completely obsolete labor is not true. And when we think that it's becoming obsolete, we are actually forgetting of what is happening right now and what it might look in future for these dynamics and relations. So again, this question that really interested me was like, if we assume that the warehouses will be completely robotic and automated in the near future, what would it mean for women of color who are overwhelmingly performing these hard tasks of picking 20 kgs of parcels, packing them, unpacking them, loading them into the trucks, unloading them from there, putting the inventories in their places, and so on and so forth? Would they be replaced? Would there be a change in dynamics? Would they have like better pay? What will happen to their conditions? Would anything change if the robots come and quote unquote make the workers' task more convenient? So this idea of convenient and profit maximization is quite interesting in my opinion, because like whose profit is the automation increasing, and whose wages are increasing, and who is benefiting from whom? Is this power dynamics is very, very key to understand how gender also plays into technologies of the warehouse. So yeah, that's about the paper that I was working on. And before I go into what I found so far of these questions, I will play a song by, it's actually track number 5 on the album Big Bunny, and I think I played Big Bunny in one of my older open mics. But Big Bunny is an album by Alaska Reed, and I'm now going to play the 5th track, which is called Warm. So let's warm up, because Burnaby is cold today. So yeah, let's go.
Sticking to our seats, winter melts away, asphalt and ice cream. I don't feel like I have a lot of friends. My mom says you gotta learn to pretend.
That was Warm by Alaska Reed in the album Big Bunny. And the artist is a alternate indie songwriter and player. And actually her songs have this merge of classic alternative influences with a contemporary sensibility. So I think the fun part of her tunes is that there is emotion in the lyrics and the beats are so popping. So that's like a very good balance in my opinion in this song. So yeah, that was that. And now sort of coming back to our discussion of this intersection or overlapping, I think intersection is like a scary word, so I'm gonna use overlapping. That there is this cross-section, overlapping, intersection, I'm going to use all the synonyms here, between gender and the automation of warehouses. And I'm talking about Amazon in particular a bit, because like that's the biggest warehouse, like multi-country, multinational billionaire company. So yeah, that's more useful to talk about it because I think we can also like relate to it and understand what goes behind these companies and the functions of add to cart that we just do it and we don't realize what's happening behind the scenes, and there's like a package delivered to us and we go on and check our previous orders or whatever and see, okay, this is gonna deliver on Monday, and we're like, oh, this is gonna take too long, and you know, we don't think about what's happening behind the scenes. So that's important to sometimes look at that. So as I was saying before the song, there is an assumption of that robotic workspaces and warehouses in specific, they would make the labor, the human labor, obsolete. But what would it mean for women or women specifically of color who make the biggest chunk of these workers or these laborers? So what it would mean for them if this sort of like layoff happens? Or to answer that, I think it's important to think what historically happened and what's going on right now to understand if this is a feasible future, and if it is, what it might mean. So I think all these sort of like answers are related and rooted into the present and the historical perspective of how like a warehouse workers and automation has existed. So what I found while I was writing this paper is that this author called Alessandra Del Fonte, he is a professor in University of Toronto, and I'm close looking at his work, which is called The Warehouse Worker and Robots at Amazon Centers. So I'm looking at the second chapter of his book, which looks into this obsession with speed, productivity, efficiency in the warehouse workers, and what it might mean for the psychological and physical well-being of the workers actually in those warehouses. By intending a pun in the chapter's heading, which says work hard, the author brings out this argument that automation does not necessarily mean that the workers' tasks or the speed with which they have to do certain tasks would be reduced, or their injuries would be reduced because they don't have to pick those 20-kilo packages anymore. But what in actuality happens is that robots or like automation happens alongside the workers, so they don't become obsolete right away. They remain there. The only thing that actually happens is that they are being monitored more closely, and now they have to sort of match the pace of the algorithms. And as I was saying before the break again, this data of how long each person is taking, each individual worker is taking, that is fed into the watches, on the wristwatches of the warehouse workers, who are then dictated, okay, you got 50 seconds to pick up this box and put it on the conveyor belt. So this is what you do in 50 seconds. If you don't do that, you're not doing it right. So this customization and this quote-unquote convenience of how you ought to do your work and when you do and what you do, this comes with a lot of prices. And there's always like a trade-off which we have to do. And it's not always a give or a win-win situation for both. It's not you give and you take. It's most certainly worse conditions for the workers. So it is not significantly improve in any sense the condition of the workers. And this professor from UOT, University of Toronto, highlighted that the new algorithmized manager, that's what I called, and it feels cool to call these fancy names. these managers being the watches, the wristwatches, the scanners, the timers everywhere, they give direction and make the decisions which could go and benefit and maximize the profit for the corporation. So instead of a manager in the 1800s who would like be do this fast, do this quick, you got a minute on the clock, there is these machines who are ticking down every second, and they're like, you got to pick it up, you got to do this, you got to open it, close it, blah, blah, blah. So this algorithmized manager is giving the directions and making the decision now. But this use of software systems to organize labor is not at all a neutral endeavor. So technology in the workplace, again, reflects and maintains the power relations that underpin the employment relationships. So by this, the professor means that the technology may seem that it's sort of easing the task, so it's not a manager scolding you or picking on you. It's technology now. That's the change. And the power relations, the control that it is maintaining, the stronghold, it still remains. And the pay versus the profit, the worker pay and the profit that these corporations earn, there is no direct correlation. So if a profit margin is like, let's say, 80%, the wage increase would be hardly 8%. So there's like a huge gap in how profit which the company earns actually goes to its workers. That there's a huge gap in that, because like they have to maintain the control. They won't let the workers, you know, resent if they pay them more. So there was also a tough contention in getting trade unions in these warehouses, because they were understood as they would rebel the hard circumstances and harsh conditions that these people work in. I don't think so that introducing robots or like more and more machines in the warehouse would help the workers in any way if we don't change the structure, the power dynamics that already exist. And for women of color, who are like seasonal workers, because like they work in, they can be laid off at any moment. So this precarity of labor is really, really real for these people. So I don't see the introduction of robots changing it in any way. And if it were to change, it would go worse, according to this argument that I'm presenting here. And before I go into this sort of interconnection between platform capitalism and techno futures and this discussion of intersection of gender and automation, I'm going to play one more music, which is called Sound of Moving. And it's the first track on this album called Without Color. So Sound of Moving on the album Without Color. And it's presented by a trio band, which is called Blue Tomorrows. So I'm going to play the song. Yes.